and very important to sort of access all of that material and all that thinking around the Sabbath. Photo by Lisa, very good. So that's a wonderful image. And I thought tonight I'd look at Luke 6, 1 to 11. And so here goes. You ready? Are you?
Yes.
Definitely. Well, Marty's ready, so that's good. One of the biggest problems we have as a culture is our lack of Sabbath rest. And what I mean by that is the discipline of and the practice of Sabbath rest. So three headings: why, where, and how. Why do we need it? Where do we get it? And how do we do it? So the first, why do we need it? Why do we need Sabbath rest? Well, look at Luke 6, 1 to 2. Jesus and his disciples is going through a field on a Sabbath day, and they pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. And the Pharisees accuse them of breaking the Sabbath. And that's because reaping grain was one of the 39 forms of work that were forbidden on the Sabbath by the religious regulations at that time. As soon as we hear that, just picking grains and rubbing them in our hands, that's breaking the Sabbath. As soon as we hear that, our immediate response is, what? Crazy. Exactly. Crazy. How legalistic can you get? I mean, all those ridiculous rules, they're terrible. And we turn up our nose at them. But notice Jesus' response is not, I have come to do away with the Sabbath or to get past all that. That's not what he says. He says, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. And we'll get to that soon, but it means at least this: I'm all about the Sabbath. The Sabbath is what I'm all about. Which means the most workaholic culture in the history of the world, that's us, we're in no position to turn up our noses at any efforts, even misguided efforts, to give rest to people. When I say we are the most workaholic culture in the history of the world, I mean modern society has four worrying trends. Firstly, there has never been a culture where job security was as bad. Secondly, people are working harder and longer than ever. There's been a lot of research into that. Thirdly, technology means that we can take work everywhere, so it spills into every nook and cranny of our lives. And fourthly, this is a little bit more complex, cultural analysts say, and there's pretty much universal agreement on this, that in traditional societies, you got your meaning in life through your family. And through being a mother or father, a sister or brother, a parent or child, husband or wife, and work wasn't so important. You just found some work to make a living because family is what made you who you are. But we're the first culture in history that says, define yourself by deciding what you want to be and achieving it, and then you have significance. Which means there's never been more psychological, social, or emotional pressure on our work to be either fulfilling or at least make heaps of money. There's never been a culture like ours. Which means we're more desperately in need of rest than ever before. And the loss of family means we're emotionally less able to rest than ever. Jewish author Judith Shulevitz recently wrote a very cool article called Bring Back the Sabbath. She was raised in a religious Jewish community. She observed the Sabbath every Saturday. She went to the synagogue with her community and rested, all of that. And she rebelled against all that stuff. And then later in life, she realized that every Saturday afternoon, she would get depressed and morose. She'd hang out with friends, she'd do brunch, she'd do all those wonderful things. But nonetheless, by Saturday afternoon, she would be restless, she would be depressed. And then she began doing something that she hadn't done since she was a teenager. She began dropping in on a nearby synagogue. And finally, she worked out why she was getting so depressed and restless every Saturday. She says she was suffering from a lack of a Sabbath. And so she wrote this article, Bring Back the Sabbath. And she says there's so much evidence that our society is so out of whack in our relationship to work. She says the Sabbath is an institution that has kept workaholism in reasonable check for thousands of years. And she points out, most people wrongly believe that all you have to do to rest is to not work. But the inventors of the Sabbath understood that it's much more complicated than that. We can't downshift easily or casually. She says, that's why the Puritan and Jewish Sabbaths were so exactingly intentional. The rules weren't there to torture people. They were to help people break the ceaseless striving of their life. Because it's surprisingly hard to stop working and to really rest. We need discipline. We need good habits. We need to be part of a community that's resting together. We need the Sabbath, she says. So she's saying, in spite of, you know, the potential for the abuse of the Sabbath, our relationship to work in our society is so out of whack. Anyone who thinks they're able to get rested by simply knocking off when they feel tired is hopelessly naive. She's saying the ability to rest, deeply rest, it's not natural, it's not simple, it's extremely difficult. And it takes heaps of discipline and practice. And she says, look, it's not just about physical rest. There's something else that only the Sabbath can help you with. She says, and listen to this, I've got a quote here. When the Sabbath was still sacred, not only did drudgery give way to festivity in family gatherings and occasional worship, but the machinery of self-censorship shut down too, stilling the eternal inner murmur of self-reproach. The eternal inner murmur of self-reproach. Whoa. What's she talking about? Sleep experts say that in order to be restored, we don't just need an amount of sleep, we need a depth of sleep. What they call REM, rapid eye movement sleep. And of course, that only happens after a certain period of time. So if I take 8 one-hour naps and then say I slept for hours, yeah, but I'd be absolutely fatigued. Because we have to have sleep for a certain period of time before we go into deep sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. So we don't just need an amount of sleep, we need depth of sleep. And what she's saying is, and what I'm saying is, on the one hand, there's our external work, and we do need rest from our external work, but there's a deeper problem. There's a work underneath the work. There's the eternal inner murmur. There's the inner machinery of self-censorship. What does she mean by that? It's not guilt. It's the need to prove ourselves to ourselves, to others, and that work is what makes all other work so weary. That's what causes the deepest weariness. It's exhausting, always needing to prove ourselves, always trying to make sure we're good enough. It's never enough. We never get there. As we were watching Grand Designs this weekend, there was this guy building this incredibly large house for himself and his wife, and he has this incredible heart attack during it. He was just so driven to do this incredibly big house, it just pushed them to the wall, has this massive heart attack. The inner murmur of self-reproach. We're trying to know who we are. We're trying to show other people and ourselves, I'm somebody important, I matter, I amount to something. And we do that through doing, through achieving. And it's never enough. It's never finished. And we need to find deep rest for our souls. Without deep soul rest, all the holidays in the world won't help. If we take all kinds of holidays, it won't be enough. Unless we find the deeper rest of the soul, we're going to be fatigued all of the time. So underneath the physical rest, there's a deep need for soul rest. So we need Sabbath rest. So where do we get it, secondly? Look at what Jesus says. They say he's violated the Sabbath, but how does he respond? He says, verse 3, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God and, taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat. And then he gave some to his companions." Now, what's interesting here is Jesus takes this incident from 1 Samuel 21, where David was on the run, running for his life to the tabernacle for sanctuary. And in the tabernacle, there's a place where the showbread is, the bread of the presence, which was in the holy place in the tabernacle. It was part of the Sabbath worship. And you weren't allowed to eat it, but David did. He ate it. And of course, as Jesus implies, God never condemned him for that. God never said that David had done something wrong. And Jesus is saying, think through the implications of that. If the Sabbath and worship regulations can be set aside just like that, but on the other hand, there's absolutely no place anywhere in the Bible where the moral law can be set aside. I mean, there's no place where God says, well, you were in a hurry, you were running for your life, so worshipping an idol was okay, or murdering someone was okay. No, there's no place where the moral law is set aside, but the Sabbath and the ceremonial and the worship regulations are set aside by David. So what does that mean? It means that those regulations were only provisional. Sabbath regulations were only temporary, meaning they'll end when something comes along that they were pointing to, something that will make them obsolete. What could that be? Jesus says the very next verse, "I am the Lord of the Sabbath." That's amazing. What's he saying? He's saying, I am the one the Sabbath regulations were always pointing to. I can give you the deep rest for your soul that you most need. I'm the Lord of rest. Come to me and I will give you rest. Rest for your souls. And this means if we want deep rest, we need to go to him. And if we think we've come to him, yet we still haven't found this deep rest, then we don't know what we have. We haven't taken hold of what we have. I am the Lord of the Sabbath. Wow, Jesus is saying, through me and only through me can you get this rest. Everybody's trying to get meaning out of something. But only if you make me the meaning of your life will you have absolute rest. Only through me will you be able to look at yourself and look at your work and look at everything and say, it is finished. Everything that's necessary to be done has been done. Why? Because on the cross, Jesus was able to say, it is finished. What is finished? Everything necessary for salvation. In other words, Jesus came to live a life that we should have lived, and he lived it perfectly. And he came to die the death that we should have died, our penalty, and he did that perfectly. So when God looks at us, if we've received Jesus as our Savior, what does it mean to receive Jesus as our Savior? What does it mean to be Christian? It doesn't mean I'm trying to be like Jesus, please help me. A Christian is someone who says, I don't rest in my own works, but on his. I rest on his finished work. Accept me because not of my record, but because of his record. Accept me not because of my works, but because of his works. And the minute we say that, God imputes his sin to us, and I mean our sin to him and his righteousness to us, which is what 2 Corinthians 5:21 says. And his righteousness being given to us means that when God looks at us in Christ, he says, it is good. And everything necessary that we've got to do, it's finished. You know, and the only eyes of the world that we really should have to prove ourselves to have already said to us, you are my beloved child in whom I am well pleased. So we don't have to prove ourselves. So how do we get this Sabbath rest, thirdly? Well, anything we try to do to rest, whether that's taking time off work, holidays, whatever it is, anything we do before we understand what I've just gone through is never going to work. Holidays don't deal with the deep thing, the need for deep rest. But once we've understood what Jesus did for us and we've come to him, here's a few things we can do. This is how to practice Sabbath. The last thing we see with Jesus is he heals a man with a shriveled hand on the Sabbath. That's verse 10. Now, according to religious regulations at that time, you could do medical treatment if a man or a woman was about to die. But you couldn't do medical treatment like Jesus does here. You couldn't do what Jesus does when he heals this man. So Jesus here breaks the Sabbath. But notice again, he doesn't say, the reason I'm doing this is because the Sabbath is finished. We don't do Sabbath anymore. We don't need to practice the Sabbath. He doesn't say that. He talks as if the Sabbath is still here. So verse 9, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil? What he's saying is that I'm doing what you should be doing on the Sabbath, which is restorative. I'm restoring the shriveled. Most Christians believe that Jesus fulfills the Sabbath in such a way that we don't have to be under all those regulations of the Old Testament. We don't have to do like 3,000 things about how far you can walk and how far you can't walk on the Sabbath or anything like that, and that's true. But Jesus is saying that the practice of the Sabbath is still vital. And because we don't have all those regulations and rules, if anything, I think it's harder for us. We have to figure out how we are going to observe the Sabbath. So here are some disciplines and practices that I strongly suggest we do. There's two inner disciplines and five outer disciplines, if you like. So what I'm saying is, if we want to take hold of the Sabbath rest that Jesus offers us, the deep rest of the soul, this is how we can practice Sabbath. Sabbath, a practice of Sabbath, will allow us to take hold of what Jesus offers and live from that, so that our relationship to work will not be out of whack anymore. Make sense? Whatever we do on the Sabbath is useless if we don't understand what Jesus has done for us. Well, inner disciplines, two I recommend. If we don't do these inner disciplines, the outer ones are useless. Number one, see the Sabbath as an act of liberation. In Deuteronomy 5:15, it says, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that I brought you out with a mighty hand. Therefore, observe the Sabbath day." Now, that's interesting. Why would God say, "You were slaves, now you're free, therefore keep the Sabbath"? Because slaves didn't have a day off. So he's essentially saying, if you don't rest, you're a slave. So think about what that means. If I can't rest, and I'm not just talking about work for income. A lot of us can't say no. A lot of us are incredibly overcommitted, incredibly busy, always too busy. If I'm always too busy and can't say no to people and can't set aside time to rest, then I am a slave. It may be self-imposed, but I'm a slave to my own needs. I'm a slave to my own insecurities. I'm a slave to my own attempts to save myself. I'm a slave to my family's hopes. I'm a slave to my culture's expectations. I'm a slave to my company, but I'm a slave. We have to learn to say in our hearts, deep in our souls, this is an act of liberation, to take a day off, to take time off. My work does not define me. Jesus Christ defines me. I am not defined by how many customers I get. I am not defined by how much money I make. I am not defined by how well I'm doing. I'm not defined by how expert I've become. I'm not. I'm taking time off today. I'm taking time off later this week. I'm taking time off this month. And I'm not even going to think about it because I'm not a slave. So number one is, we need to see this as an act of liberation. Number two, Sabbath rest points to God's work and rest, which means I'm not God, He is. And unless deep in my soul I have this deeper inner discipline that God is the one who's providing what I need, that He is the one who is running the universe, that He is the one who is providing money for my family. Unless I see that I am not God and He is, I will not take the time off that I need. So Sabbath is not only a discipline of liberation, it's a discipline of trust. I am not God. So that's the second inner discipline. Now, if we do those two internal disciplines and practice those, then we can relax into these five external disciplines. But if we don't do the internal ones, the five external ones will mean that you're still not rested. You'll still be weary. So here are the external disciplines. One, take more Sabbath time. How do you work out how much time to take? Well, most of us need to take more time. Just a rule of thumb. In our culture, we don't take enough time. That's the short answer. Number one, take more Sabbath time. Number two, balance your Sabbath time, which means do some non-vocational, some contemplative, and some inactive stuff. Non-vocational means do things you don't normally do. So fishing is non-vocational if that's not how you make your living, right? You know, if a guy makes his living out of fishing, he probably shouldn't fish on his day off, or maybe sometimes, but that's not recommended. Non-vocational activity, we need some of that, just enjoying God's creation. Secondly, contemplative. We don't really rest by just doing leisure activities. We've got to tell ourselves the story of who we are. The reason we can't rest is that we're not sure we're okay, right? So on our day of rest, we need to tell ourselves the story of what Jesus has done for us and who we are in Him. Therefore, we've got to worship on our day off. That's why the gathering is such a great Sabbath thing to do. But my day off isn't Sunday, it's Thursday. So when I take a day off on Thursday, part of that has to be worship. If I don't include worship, I'm not going to get the deep Sabbath rest of the soul that I need. Essentially, I need to tell myself who I am, the story of who I am in Christ. So non-vocational, contemplative, and thirdly, inactive. What I mean by that is that in the Old Testament, not only people, but the land got a Sabbath rest every so often. Did you know that? And whenever the land got a Sabbath year, what did they do with it? Did they put some different grain in it? No. They just left it fallow. They just let it go. And whatever came up in that field came up. And really, I'm not rested unless I have some unstructured time, some unplanned time, some time without family gatherings, and some time without non-vocational activity. Sometimes where I can just think the thoughts that come or feel the feelings that arise. I've got to have some of that unstructured time. Just be inactive, just stare out the window, whatever it is. So that's a biblical principle. So balance your Sabbath time. So first, take more Sabbath time. Secondly, balance Sabbath time. And third, be accountable for Sabbath time. So this is saying it's impossible in this world to not be overworked for periods of time. Like when you're starting out a business. You know, for 2 or 3 years you are going to overwork. Let's just face facts. But we need accountability built into that. We need to have somebody who can look us in the eye after 2 years or after 1 year, whatever you've agreed, and tell us, you've got to stop. Now, I don't want to go on and on and on in under-Sabbath mode. I want somebody to confront me. I want somebody to make sure, okay, a couple of years, but not after that. I need to slow down again and get into the proper rhythms of rest. So I need accountability for that. So take more Sabbath time. balanced Sabbath time, so it needs a bit of thinking around how to get the right kinds of elements in our Sabbath time, and thirdly, be accountable, and then fourthly, inject Sabbath time into your work. How? Well, in the Old Testament, there's a law called gleaning. And gleaning meant that you couldn't reap right to the edge of your field, and it was a designed limit on your productivity. It's not enough to work like a demon and then take time off. No. Have fewer goals. Leave margin in your work. Make sure that you have some quieter, less frantic times like January or whenever, where you can knock off early for a season or have longer lunch hours for a season. Don't just work hectically all year. Take a sabbatical every 7 or 10 years if you can swing it. This means that at some point in our lives, to really practice this, to really get this right relationship to our work, we'll probably risk falling behind in our career, or we'll not be following Jesus. In other words, at some point we need to say, I'm going to do what I need to do to rest. I'm going to take my Sabbath rest. I'm not going to let work overwhelm me. And if I do that, I'm going to risk falling behind in my career. And maybe God will let me, or maybe he won't. That's up to him. But either way, I'll stay sane. And if I fall behind and others sort of go ahead because they're overworking, well, they won't be sane. So take more Sabbath time, balance your Sabbath time, be accountable for Sabbath time, and then inject Sabbath time into your work. And then lastly, number five. The only way to think these things through is to get people around us and to brainstorm together. How are we going to stop our work from overwhelming us completely? How are we going to put work in its place? How are we going to work well, but how are we going to rest well? The only one we should have to prove ourselves to looks at us and says, it is good. It is finished.